Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Devin Loveland, and I'm here today with the President and Vice President of CIPLA, the Student Intellectual Property Law Association here at Brigham Young University. Corey Fisher is the President of CIPLA and is a third-year law student at BYU who is interested in intellectual property law. Corey will be clerking for Justice Himonis on the Utah Supreme Court next year and then begin working as a patent attorney immediately after. Taylor Wofford is the Vice President of CIPLA and is also a third-year law student at BYU. Taylor has an interest in intellectual property law. Taylor is currently doing patent prosecution work and has accepted a position as a patent attorney after graduation next year. These two students are excited to talk to us today about their experiences with CIPLA and BYU law, as well as other background that they've had in their lives. As background, BYU Student Intellectual Property Law Association, CIPLA, is a student-run organization that welcomes any student interested in learning more about intellectual property law. Thank you guys for coming today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Wonderful. Well, to begin, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourselves?
My name's Corey Fisher. I am a non-traditional student at BYU Law, and that basically means that I didn't graduate and attend law school immediately after my college education. So I was away for approximately 20 years. I did a variety of other things. I have a karate school that I run. I did some work as an engineer. And so I've done a lot of different things, and I kind of did a career pivot and decided that I wanted to come back to law school. And so far it's been a great experience. I love it. I love being back in school and learning again.
Wonderful. We're so happy to have you. Taylor.
Yeah, my name's Taylor Wofford. I'm also a 3L or a third year law student. And I'm beginning to learn that I'm a little bit less of a traditional law student as well, even though, so basically I graduated from BYU with a degree in mechanical engineering, and then I was an engineer for a while, and also, like Corey, did a pivot and left, you know, a pretty good job in engineering to go to law school.
Wonderful. That's perfect. Thank you so much. Well, okay. My first question is, what prompted those pivots? We'll start with Corey and then go to Taylor. Mm-hmm. What prompted the pivot? Because from the engineering side to law seems like a pretty decent sized pivot to me.
It does. And I think a lot of people feel that way. When I was an undergrad, I didn't even think of law school as a for a master's degree or for further education. But I knew that I'd want to go back to further my education. And for me, it was important to have a family and to have the mom in the home. So I did a lot of part-time work doing engineering kinds of things. And then, quite honestly, I got a little bored. And so I started a karate school because I could do it, keep myself maybe better in shape. And also my kids could be involved. So I ran a karate school for a good 15 years before I decided I wanted to go back to school.
She still runs a karate school.
I do still run my karate school. So I'm multitasking.
Very impressive.
But when my youngest child got almost ready to graduate from high school, I decided I wanted to go back to school. And at that time, I was looking for graduate degrees for my daughter as well. And my daughter is a computer science major, and I found out that she could do patent law, which you have to have an undergrad in a science to qualify to be a patent attorney.
Oh, really?
And so I said to her, I honestly said to her, you like to argue, you should be an attorney. And I kept after her for probably about 6 months, trying to convince her that this was the ideal field for her. And after about 6 months' time, she actually stopped me and said, Mom, stop it. If patent law is so fantastic, you do it.
This is your path.
So obviously she didn't agree. So actually the very next day I was at BYU Law School at the admissions office and told him, really? Hey, how do I do this? And that's where it started for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have to brag on Corey for a minute here. On top of all of that, Corey's like top of our class. She's on law review. She made the moot court team. She is taking like a bajillion credits and is like auditing credits just for fun because that's fun, apparently. She's clerking for Justice Simonis, is Supreme Court Justice in the Utah Supreme Court. And like every firm in Utah wants to hire her. So
I feel like I paid you for that, but I didn't.
This is not a paid promotion.
This is not a paid promotion. This is candor.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yeah. So that's a lot of stuff. How do you manage your time with all of that?
I think for me, it's so fun to stay busy. I like to have something to do. My husband tells me if I ever have a free moment that I will fill it, and I'm not happy unless I'm overloaded. And that might be a little bit of a personality that I have. But because I am that personality, I spend a lot of time organizing. So I have schedules and I have lists. So I know when I need to get things done. And so it works really well for me, and I'm not happy unless I'm probably a little overscheduled.
I'd imagine a schedule would be very helpful, essential
it
in
is.
That case. Well, wonderful. Taylor, what caused your pivot? What prompted that?
So I was working as a mechanical engineer for a company here in Utah, and I didn't love it. You know, in my undergrad, I always knew that at some point I wanted to get a graduate degree of some sort. But after, like, you know, 5 years of a mechanical engineering degree, I was like, the last thing I can think about right now is more school. So I went and got a job, and I, you know, worked as an engineer for a while. And I liked, you know, principles of engineering and kind of knowing and understanding and figuring things out. But just a lot of the process of engineering I didn't love. And so I started to look into, you know, potential graduate programs, which I was pretty much limited to, like, an MBA or law school or maybe medical school, but that didn't really seem to fit the bill either. And so I kind of didn't really feel like an MBA was a thing, and I started to look into law school and realized that patent law is a thing, which, just by way of explanation, patent law is kind of a unique area of law. It kind of has a relatively high bar of entry. Basically, in order to be an attorney, you know, you have to go to law school and then pass a state bar exam. But in order to be a practicing patent attorney, you have to actually pass another exam, which is like a federally administered exam by the Patent and Trademark Office. And to even qualify to sit to take that exam, you basically have to have a hard science degree or an engineering degree. So basically, you're limited to patent attorneys are engineers that went to law school. And if you know any engineers, you probably know that they don't really seem like the type that goes to law school, right? So it's a pretty good path, you know, for those of us that want to do it. There's just, it's in demand, and there's not, you know, a ton of people that can practice it. I think in our class there's like 10 or so mm-hmm. out of 120 something.
And there's a lot more in our class than the classes around us.
Yeah, a lot more. So basically I'm a very like calculating person that, you know, if I'm going to make the pivot and, you know, take this risk, I want to make sure that, you know, it's going to pay out for me. And so kind of learning that and realizing like, oh, like I really have a good opportunity if I can pair this engineering degree with a law degree and do patent law. And then another thing that really drove my decision is if you talk to attorneys and say, I'm thinking about going to law school, should I go to law school? They all say, don't go to law school. It's not worth it.
Except
if you talk to patent attorneys, all of them are like, it's great.
Really?
Like, I love my job. You know, you make good money. You have a very predictable schedule. It's good work, you know. So that was like, you know, a big factor in my decision was, you know, patent attorneys seem to like being patent attorneys. So I made the pivot, and similar to Corey, I kind of limited my scope to, you know, the Utah law schools. And I kind of looked at some other places too, but just had a really good opportunity here at BYU Law. So I took it, and can't believe we're almost done now.
Wow. Awesome. Well, I have kind of an interesting and specific question for Corey.
Okay.
You're an experienced owner and master instructor of martial arts. How has this background helped you become prepared for the courtroom, which can be described at times as adversarial?
That's a great question. I have found that martial arts training has prepared me in a ton of different ways for law school. The adversarial that you mentioned, I feel like I have a lot more control of self having done martial arts for so long. So I've run my business for almost 20 years, but I did martial arts obviously long before that to prepare. And I think I developed a lot more of an ability to calm down. For instance, when you first start martial arts and you're beginning and you're sparring and you get hit, it's pretty typical that people have a temper tantrum or either cry or get angry. And it just seems to be human nature. And it's something that you just learn to, when something hits you out of the blue and you know, just get your wind knocked out of you or even, you know, a little bit in pain.
Yeah.
It's a natural reaction. And I think just having had that experience and the physical reaction, having had those emotions and physical and react to those, I think some of that same adrenaline would correlate to in a courtroom. And so I've had that experience. I also think that in martial arts, you learn to really work individually, but as a team. And I think in law, it's very similar. There's a lot of what you need to learn. You need to be competent on your own, but at the same time, you're a team with your fellow attorneys or with your fellow students or even with your client. So I think that that ability to work independently and be accountable for your own skill set, but also work as a team and help others translate it as well.
That's awesome. So you've gained a greater, I guess, self-control. Would that be accurate?
Yes, I would say that that's probably the biggest thing that I think correlated.
You're not going to be flipping people over tables in the courtroom, but you've got greater self-control because of your background in martial arts.
But she could if she wanted.
That's true. What is your level in martial arts?
I am currently a sixth degree black belt. I also have third degree black belts in two other styles. So I have
three styles.
So my main style is called Tonren Do karate.
Okay.
So it's a punching kicking style.
Okay.
But I also have studied Shintoshi and a Taekwondo. So Mudok Kwan Taekwondo. So I've got, and all of those are punching kicking.
Yeah. Wow. That's so impressive.
Thank you.
Very cool. What is something you wish people knew? This is a question for both of you. What is something you wish people knew before they applied for a patent?
I can answer this one. Where do I start? we were actually just talking about this the other day, that in the United States, if you disclose your invention, meaning you show it to the public or you put it on a website or something, you actually start a one-year time bar. So from the minute that you disclose, you have 1 year to submit a patent application for that invention. And that actually only applies in the United States. Foreignly, you don't even get that time bar.
It's so, just automatic that once you publish something on a website,
you lose your right to a patent because it's been disclosed to the public. So, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, and part of that is because, right, the purpose of a patent is you get exclusivity and you can forbid other people from practicing your patent in return for sharing it with the public. But if you've already shared it with the public, where's the advantage in the system? So there are some reasons for that, but you definitely do not want to disclose your invention before you file a patent.
So one of the, it's called the Law and Entrepreneurship Clinic at the law school, is basically a clinic that like local entrepreneurs can get legal help, be it like entity formation or help with contracts and intellectual property is one of them. So I'm in that, and some of the clients in the clinic, you know, have patent needs, and I talk to them and they're like, yeah, here, look at this website. This is what our product is. And I'm like, guys,
you ruined it.
when did this website go live? You know, oh, well, you know, whatever, a couple months ago. And I'm like,
we
gotta get going, because like it takes a while to get an application together and get it in and everything. So
like how long about?
So you can do preliminary applications or like full blown applications, and preliminary applications can be pretty like quick and dirty, and you can honestly submit anything. I mean, it could be a slideshow or a PowerPoint with what the invention is, and that's just kind of to put your stake in the ground and like give you that filing date. But if you're doing a full blown like good application. I'd say for like patent attorneys, it probably takes about like 40 hours. And for us that aren't experienced patent attorneys, you know, it takes much longer than that. So,
yeah, and that preliminary application that he was talking about, probably even an experienced patent attorney, it'll take him 8 hours, yeah. You know, for unless they're just taking the slideshow verbatim.
Yeah, and but yeah. Anyway, so I'd say for you inventors out there, don't go telling anybody. I mean, you can show it to people, you know, with confidentiality, you know, understanding and stuff like that, but don't be, you know,
don't broadcast it.
Don't broadcast it. Don't, you know, publish your research or present it at a conference or put it on a website or something until you've talked to a patent attorney.
All right, before you've gotten some consultation.
Right.
Are there certain industries that are more, I guess, secretive or competitive or cutthroat with patents than others? Because I've spoken with a doctor and he said that the medical industry is pretty cutthroat as far as like trying to steal other people's
There is something
inventions.
To that because pharmaceutical patents are worth so much money.
Yeah.
And the when you're researching for pharmaceuticals, it is really expensive. Mm. It's hard to get a patent. So you've spent a lot of money towards that. And then the return is so big if you actually get something that's very useful. Mm. So it is like any industry, it's right. A little more competitive if there's the big money returns, and that is one area that there's a big stakes.
Yeah, I mean, patents by their nature are not secretive, right? Because you have to disclose it to the public. Right. That's part of the deal of a patent. But like Corey's saying, probably especially in the pharmaceutical industry, like you can't get a patent until you have completed your invention. So I'm sure it takes years to develop new drugs. And so that process, I'm sure, has to be kept under wraps so that competitors don't take half your research and finish it before you and then patent it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's all very interesting.
Neither of us are like biology, life science people. Yeah. So that's
out
of
our wheelhouse.
Right, engineers.
Yeah, we're, I do mechanical stuff and Corey does software and electronics.
Yeah. Well, so what do you wish pre-law or current law students even knew about intellectual property law? What's a common misconception or something you wish they would know?
I actually think I would really like for people to know that intellectual property is a real thing in law. Hmm. I think there not as many undergraduates know that you can go to law school and still, if your mindset, if you just kind of an IP kind of person and you like those puzzles and you like that kind of that kind of inspires your juices. You know, that's why you were an engineer. That's why you wanted to do it. But it just doesn't quite seem to fit where you belong. That law school is a really good opportunity. Mm. That there are ways to merge law school and IP. And I don't think as many undergrads know that that is really a thing.
Yeah, I would second that. I wish that while I was doing my undergrad, you know, engineering degree, that somebody had told me, hey, there's an option for law school and this is what having an engineering degree can do for you in law, because I had no idea. I had to figure it out on my own. And had I not, I wouldn't be here. Mm. So I know Corey and I have kind of talked about like maybe figuring out a way that we can approach, you know, some of the engineering schools in, you know, science schools to put something together to, you know, let people know that like this is a very viable career option. Just going to law school with these science undergrads.
Yeah, get the word out. Yeah.
And on top of that, there even if you didn't have a science undergrad, there are trademarks and copyrights, and there's a lot of cyber law out there that really for a lot of now today's generation has grown up just accepting computers as part of their lives. Right. And there's a lot of tricky law involved there. And so you don't have to have a science degree. There's still a lot of options for others, too, in the IP realm.
Intellectual property covers basically four areas. You have patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. A lot of times, patents kind of get the focus of that. Mm-hmm. And that's in order to prosecute patents or, like, you know, work with the patent office to get patents, you have to have this science undergrad. But to do copyrights, trademarks, and trade secrets, you don't. So there's this kind of common distinction between hard IP and soft IP, and depending on who you are, soft IP might be an offensive term because there's people that, like, you know, if they're doing soft IP, they just want to think of it as IP, which it is, you know. So some people don't like to be told that they're doing the soft version of IP.
Right? What's the difference? How do you distinguish those?
So patents is hard IP.
Okay.
I think probably because, you know, hard science.
Okay.
And then trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets is the soft IP.
Oh, that makes sense.
So even if you don't have the science degree, and we have a lot of members of our club that are not science backgrounds and have interest in doing copyrights and trademarks and stuff. So,
you know, if you want to work for Disney and do trademarks and copyrights, you know, there's a call for that.
Yeah.
And especially from like a business perspective, you know, a lot of the most valuable assets that a business owns is its intellectual property. You know, be it, you know, some patent that they own or just the brand in general, you know, which is encompassed by trademarks, you know. So people that are interested in business and, you know, maybe business-focused law, you know, I think there's a lot. Intellectual property is married with that in many respects.
Okay. So trade secrets, I'm assuming that's not just like the KFC secret blend of spices.
It is.
It is. Yeah. Well, what else does it encompass?
Or the Coke recipe.
The Coke recipe. You know? Okay.
So it's anything that you want to keep secret, you know, as long as you make reasonable efforts to keep it secret.
So like all the Marvel goings on. I have a question. So there was, with the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer, it was leaked. Mm-hmm. Does that have anything to do with, like, I guess, trade secrets, or what would be the consequences of that?
I would say that's probably a contractual issue. The people that work for Marvel or Disney probably have signed some contract saying
just
that they won't disclose anything.
Yeah.
Trade secrets is more, I have a method of conducting business, and I do it this way, and I keep it secret, and I don't tell anybody. So if one of my employees somehow, you know, leaks that, the Coke recipe out, I can still have some protection, and, you know, if I can kind of get a wrap on it and prevent other people from using it because I've kept it secret. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Like, sorry if that was a dumb question.
Like if you were designing a bicycle and you had a super way to make it super light, and so the fibers inside the bicycle somehow were better, but you didn't want anyone to see it, and your factory was all closed off to the public, then your employee can't go and disclose that to somebody else and jump ship and teach somebody else how to do that.
Gotcha.
Unless you didn't really try that hard to keep them from doing that.
Well, so how difficult is it to get a rap on those kind of things if they do?
I mean, I'm sure, you know, big companies like, you know, KFC and their secret blend of spices or whatever, I'm sure that there's a handful of people that know that and nobody else. And so I'm sure that it's probably they invest a lot in keeping that secret. But it just kind of depends, you know. You have the issue of like reverse engineering too, you know. So say Corey's bike example, she makes this product and sells it, but then somebody's able to like take the bike apart and kind of reverse engineer how she did it. At that point, she loses her trade secret protection because it's not, you know, it's commonly known now.
So if they reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
Reverse engineering is not protected by trade secrets. If you think you have a product that is that awesome, like my bike example, and I want it protected, then I would have to do a patent. If I think someone can reverse engineer it, your best bet is to ask for a patent on that. Because then you can explain how it's done. And for 20 years, nobody else can do it. But in 21 years from then, somebody else can then make that bike.
Okay.
Yeah. So the benefit of a trade secret is that it can last indefinitely. So,
but the con is that if they reverse engineer it, then it's...
Yeah, I mean, if somebody's able to, like, I don't know, chemically diagnose what's in the Coke recipe and, like, you know, release it to everybody, then Coke is out of luck at that point, but I don't think that's happening. So.
I doubt it. Yeah. Okay. Well...
But one thing I was going to add, that brings up just kind of another interesting wrinkle is that these kind of four areas of intellectual property, you know, they overlap in many instances, you know. So you have a product and you might want to get parts of it patented, but you might want to get parts of it, you know, with a trademark, you know, maybe parts of it can be trade secret, but there's a lot of layers, you know, to, you know, that companies do to protect their intellectual property.
For sure.
Yeah. So.
Awesome. Well, I have a question for Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
You were recently a summer associate for Ray, Quinney, and Nebaker. How deeply have the people you've associated with there affected your future in law?
Yeah, so I, you know, our first year when, you know, our grades come out and you're applying to all these, you know, interviews to the different firms and stuff, I was given the advice by just kind of a mentor that I have that, like, while I'm going and interviewing at firms, I should also be interviewing the firms to kind of just see which firms I like. And, the, you know, every business and every law firm has its own, like, kind of personality. And so I was drawn to Ray, Quinney, Nebaker, and I really enjoyed the people that I met there. And so that's kind of informed my decision of going there for my first, you know, summer clerkship. And while I was there, you know, I really liked the work, but more importantly, I really liked the office, I liked the people, I liked the, you know, just kind of the vibe and the personality of the firm. And so that's just made an easy decision for me to, like, you know, that's where I want to be. So that's where, you know, I accepted an offer for when I graduate. And, you know, staying in Utah, I didn't chase the big law salaries of the big coastal firms that, you know, pay you way more money. Just because I think that that firm personality was so important to me that, you know, I feel like the work is going to probably be pretty much the same wherever you go, but the people are going to be different, and the people you work with are going to be different, and, you know, the kind of different nuances of the firms are going to be different. So I would say that that was probably informed my decision more than any other factor, was just my experience there and the people and how much I liked it.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, Corey, I have a question for you.
Okay.
You both have had, like, a lot of different opportunities, a lot of different experiences. Is there one in particular for you that has surprised you, pleasantly surprised you, I guess?
With firms, just in law school, that kind of thing?
Anything. Any opportunity that's kind of surprised you in your life that you're like, oh, I never even thought of that, or I didn't think that I would be here, but you're happy to be there.
Something that I didn't think I would want to do is clerk for a judge. And because for intellectual property law, if you're going to go further in your career, it isn't necessary to clerk for a judge. So what I will do as a clerk will be to work on court cases and help with different general matters of Utah law. So it's not necessarily patent focused, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And there are courts that just focus on patents, but this is not where I accepted a position. And I'm so excited that I will be able to kind of get an experience and see law from that perspective, from a courtroom, and see how it affects just people in general in so many different ways. And that was kind of surprising to me that I would have that opportunity. And in fact, when I was interviewing with the justice, we talked about that. And he said, you know, it's invaluable. And he's Justice Monis that I'm going to be working for, is really supportive of that kind of concept to have lawyers in general have a different, more of a broader view of the law. And I'll be working with Access to Justice, which is a program that helps people that don't necessarily have the means or ways to get access to law. And I'm just really excited to have that opportunity. And I'm kind of surprised in myself, in fact, that because I went to law school for patents. I knew I wanted to be a patent attorney. That's where I wanted to head. And just to have so many different options and to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
That's maybe amazing. Explain, like, what a clerkship is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For the listeners out there.
So a clerkship, actually, that is kind of a good point. So a clerkship doesn't sound like that big of a deal, right? Because you're a clerk, right? It's just the wording is a little not very descriptive. But what you get to do as a clerk is to sit in chambers with a judge. You're assigned, each judge gets a 1, 2, 3 clerks, depending on their workload. And that clerk works with them for a year. And it can go up to 2 years. But you just get a 1-year position. And you get a chance to help the judge you're kind of a sounding board for the decision that he is making in each case. Mm-hmm. So you research the law and research it, how it applies to the case itself. Whatever the plaintiff and the defendant, what they're arguing, you make sure that their arguments are legally correct. And then come to your own personal decision on what the law should be and bring it to the judge. And my understanding is quite a bit you get shot down, but they obviously pick people that they think are smart enough to have real opinions. And you get to kind of be just immersed in the law. And obviously, judges are not there to make the law. They're there to enact the law. So you get to go through and do a deep dive into the law and come back and say, "This judge, this is what the law is. And let me help you understand my understanding of that." And then judges are busy. They can't do that as deep of a dive. So they have these clerks for that exact reason. So it's a great experience to do.
And this happens after law school. So basically she graduates and instead of going and starting, you know, her career at the law firm, she'll clerk for Justice Jimenez for a whole year and basically for free. Just kidding. So kind of delay starting your career. But the higher the court that you're clerking for, the harder and more prestigious it is to get those positions. So that just speaks to how awesome Corey is that she's at the Utah Supreme Court.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a little competitive. There are quite a few people that really would like that deep delve into the law. Mm. So it's a competitive thing to want to do.
Yeah.
And like Taylor mentioned, they don't pay as much, but it's the experience, right?
Right, absolutely. Well, I think I've got about two more questions for you guys.
Great.
What have you learned from working with each other? Taylor, what have you learned about Corey? Or from Corey, and Corey, what have you learned from Taylor?
Don't need to go first?
Sure.
So it's interesting because in your first year of law school, your classes are all assigned. You don't pick your schedule. And they kind of divide the class into kind of three groups, and then you have all of your classes with that same group. And Corey and I were not in the same group.
Mm.
But from our first year, we've kind of gravitated toward each other, probably just because we're both kind of doing, you know, similar career paths. But I've always just known Corey to be a very hardworking, like I said, like she gives 100%, 100% of the time. And she's, you know, super smart, top of our class. She's always, you know, going above and beyond. On top of all that, you know, she's the president of this club that we're in. And so our desks are right next to each other in the law library, and you know, we have a good time, but she's always, you know, 3 weeks ahead in her reading. I'm always asking her, "Have you done this assignment yet?" "Yeah, let me remember way back when I did that." So
it's impressive.
Yeah, she's on top of it. A+ student right here.
Wonderful. Thank you, David.
So I think actually what I appreciate about Taylor is he keeps me grounded. Like he mentioned, we weren't in the same group for the first, our 1L year. We were in a group of about 40 students, and you get to know those 40 really well. But Taylor and I just hit it off, even though we weren't in classes together. We did CIPLA at the time. We were members of CIPLA as 1Ls. But other than that, we really didn't have a lot of overlapping classes. But Taylor is fun. And I need someone in my life that is fun. And I like to talk with him about the law. I like to talk with him about non-law items because he just has such a perspective and is always grounded. And so if I get too focused and I'm 3 weeks ahead in my work, which does happen.
It's a negative for sure.
You know, he'll tell me, you know, "Hey, calm down. You know, let's," and we just chat. And so I think I have learned to kind of take a step back and enjoy the moment. And I think I seek that out. And so it's really fun to have him around. I love sitting next to him in the library. So he keeps me grounded.
Yeah, Taylor does seem like a really fun person. You were also a river guide, is that right?
Yes, I was in my former life.
What was that like? Right?
Yeah, 6 years.
Yeah, so when I was in my undergrad, I worked in Southern Utah out of the Moab area. Excuse me. I worked in Southern Utah in the Moab area, and it was kind of a summer job. It was a really great summer job because it was a lot of fun, and you can make pretty decent money.
Yeah.
But then even when I graduated, much to the chagrin of my parents, decided to not, you know, get an engineering job, and I continued to work down there for a while.
Oh.
Then I met my wife down there. She's from Moab.
Yeah.
And so we got married and did that, and then decided we wanted to move on.
Did you propose on a raft?
I did not.
Okay.
No, I was not going to be that person.
That's okay.
But, yeah, so I think that experience, you know, it's a very fond experience because, you know, my wife and I both love doing that. And, you know, it's always a hard day when you got to hang up the life jacket. But it's something that we will always do, you know,
yeah,
as a family and, you know, with our friends and stuff. But it's also one thing that I think it really helped me with is just kind of developing more of an extroverted personality, because, you know, typical engineers don't talk to people and, like, aren't, you know, good with that, like, you know, emotional intelligence. But I met a lot of people and just learned how to just talk and have conversations and relate to people. And I think that's such a huge part of being a lawyer.
Yeah.
Is being able to relate to your clients and talk with people. And, you know, I think a lot of engineers don't have that, you know, which makes sense why they don't go to law school. But, you know, I think Cor and I both recognize that that's an area that we need to improve in. But I feel like that's a strength that I have probably over a lot of, you know, my engineering peers.
You know, the joke that you hear about engineers, you know you're an engineer if they're talking to their own shoes. And,
oh, yeah.
And if they're a patent attorney, they're talking to your shoes instead of their own shoes. Well, Taylor, he actually talks to a person. He's above and beyond.
Yeah, only we're allowed to make those jokes.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, only those engineers. The engineers, they all embrace the joke. They know it's true.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you guys so much for coming in today. We're going to finish off, like we do with every episode, with one last question, and that is, how do you personally define success? We'll start with Corey.
All right. I appreciate the question. I was thinking about that. And for me, success is I want to be happy. And what makes me feel content and happy and feel successful is if I do my best. So I give 100% all the time. And it doesn't matter to me as much if I am the best at it. It's if I did my best. So I put my personal best effort into almost everything I do. And I feel that I had success if I have done that effort, if I put in that effort.
Wonderful. I think that's a great definition.
I'm going to echo just a little bit of what Corey said. I have always kind of been the person with the mindset of, you know, I can do anything that I put my mind to. And so I feel successful when, you know, I make a decision to do something, be it, you know, some huge decision like go to law school or some small decision like I'm going to learn how to sew a quilt or something, you know, like, and just like, you know, learning how to do it and putting the time in and then like feeling like I completed it and did a good job, like, makes me feel successful. But on kind of more of a, you know, a larger scale, I have always been one of those people that, you know, I envy the people that really just love their job and it's their passion, you know, but I realize that, like, I don't think that's the case for a lot of people. And so I've always just, my goal has been, you know, find a job that you enjoy. But the things that I really love doing and are passionate about are things, you know, outside of work. So I try to leave work at work, and, you know, I want a job that I enjoy and, you know, that helps me feel fulfilled. But more than anything, helps me, you know, provide, you know, the life and the lifestyle for my family and the things that we want to do. So I think that's how I measure success.
Wonderful. Well, this has been an excellent conversation with Corey Fisher and Taylor Wofford of CIPLA here at BYU. Thank you guys so much for coming.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review or online at marriottstudentreview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.